the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Hour number three of Sports Talk begins. With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. We head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline to say hello to our good friend John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. You can follow his work at TexasSportsNation.com, which you can link to through Cron.com. And no doubt about it, a fantastic follow on Twitter at McClain_on_NFL. John, right out of the chute, are you a candidate to become the next coach of the Houston Rockets?
I think I'm the only one that's not. Our longtime beat writer made a list, and he had 33 possibilities on there. And I'm thinking, boy, if they are somebody that's not on your list, that's going to be embarrassing. I remember one time when the Oilers needed our head coach in 1990 after Jerry Glanville, they didn't renew his contract, and he left and went to the Falcons. My competition at the Houston Post listed 16 candidates, and he did not have my leading candidate, University of Houston coach Jack Pardee, who got the job. But I think the way they recycled them in the NBA, you can put together a pretty comprehensive list and know that one of them will get the job.
Now, all kidding aside, do you think there's any chance that that Knoxville native Elston Turner could have a shot being an assistant on the Rocket staff, or do you think they're looking for more of a proven head coach?
I think if they stay with someone on the staff, Elston would definitely have a chance, but I believe they're going outside the organization. They have to have somebody who can handle James Harden and Russell Westbrook, two superstars who just faded in a 4-1 loss to the Lakers. Nobody expected them to beat the Lakers, but they didn't expect them to win the first one and then go straight down the toilet. And James Harden struggles in the playoffs, in the big games, every year. So I think they will get a former head coach to come in here.
John, I know that you think a lot of DeAndre Hopkins, but 14 catches in his debut with Kyler Murray, did that even exceed your expectations?
It did, because that's a career high for him. I covered every one of his games, and I knew he would do well out there, and that's why they paid him a humongous and I'm happy that he got it. Would redo his deal with 3 years left. A lot of teams they called would redo a deal with 3 years left, knowing he wanted a $10 million a year raise, and the Cardinals didn't have a problem with it, so they made the trade. That's why they couldn't get more for him, because people act like they took a worse deal than they could have gotten. And I'm thinking, now, why in the world would they have done that? Nobody would do that. But Hop's off to a great start. Cardinals upset the 49ers. And because the Texans got creamed at Kansas City, then everybody wants to fire Bill O'Brien. Well, they want to fire him every day of the week anyway. So it doesn't matter what DeAndre does at Arizona. It's not going to make the pressure on him from the fans any less intense.
Were you a little disappointed in Tom Brady's debut and your thoughts on Bruce Arians' comments on Brady?
Well, I thought it was great. That's the way Arians operates. And he didn't show favoritism, and Brady didn't play well. And he said it, and he said it twice. Bill Belichick used to say it behind the scenes to Brady, in front of his teammates. He was harder on Brady than he was any player. And he did that, and Brady knew it was because he wanted to be an example. Well, if he's going to chew out the superstar, the greatest quarterback in history, I better get with the program. But in this case, Bruce Arians was critical, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because it's the truth. He didn't play very well. And the fact is, the Bucs looked like they were their offense. Their defense played pretty well. Their offense looked like it was playing in the preseason. Brady looked like he was playing in the preseason. We didn't see bad really bad football like we could have, considering no preseason and no offseason program. And it was pretty exciting, but the Bucs were a huge disappointment. And I'm glad because I picked the Saints, and I picked the Saints to beat Baltimore in the Super Bowl. And after 1 week, at least, I'm feeling pretty good.
With the way Aaron Rodgers struggled, you think Jordan Love will get the start in week two?
Yeah, I think Jordan Love was warming up in that game, and they were eager to put him in because Rodgers is too old, and they didn't get him any receivers. Think how many points the Packers would have scored, and that's the most, I believe, the Vikings have ever given up in a first game. Think how many points they would have scored if they'd actually got him some help. You know, all that whining and crying in the offseason, poor old Aaron Rodgers doesn't have any receivers from the mean old Packers, and then they go out and score more than 40 and beat their division rival.
What did you think about some of the other debuts when it came to old faces in new places? Let's start in the division. You had Phillip Rivers, who we'll just say his day didn't match up against Gardner Minshew's in Jacksonville, did it?
The mustache only had one incompletion, didn't throw for a lot of yards, didn't throw the ball down the field much, but he threw three touchdowns and no interceptions. And all that tanking for Trevor, so many of us predicted, for 1 week at least, is not coming to fruition. And people are saying, well, now they'd pass up Trevor Lawrence for Gardner Minshew. And I'm thinking, no, I don't think they would. I think what they do is they take Trevor Lawrence, keep Minshew, play Lawrence when he's ready, and then trade Minshew. And if he's playing well, that might help him get something for them. Phillip Rivers did just what he did last year. He threw too many interceptions. Threw for a lot of yards. They didn't have to punt. But you can't throw those interceptions and drop passes at crucial times. To me, that game was the biggest surprise of the weekend. Second was Washington beating Philadelphia. And, of course, Dan Snyder had nothing to do with it. But for one of the few times, you can say Washington, and it's not negative. And they're in first place in the NFC East. I'm sure it won't last long. They better get a good picture of it. But still, a great way to introduce Ron Rivera to the Washington fans. He's battling cancer, one of the great guys in the NFL. I was really happy for him.
Yeah, Washington all alone in first place in the atop the Eastern Division. What about Cam Newton's debut? What did you think in terms of right off the bat? He gets to, set a new single-game rushing record for a Patriots quarterback with a couple of touchdowns.
Well, listening to people in New England, and it's a lot of people around the country, they acted like Cam Newton just won a Super Bowl or he's some kind of Superman. What he did is he didn't turn it over. He was efficient. He ran for two touchdowns because he's a good runner. He didn't throw for much because he doesn't have good receivers. And they beat Miami. And interesting things, the Dolphins were awful. But last year and the year before, the Dolphins had a knack of pulling upsets or scaring the Patriots with Brady. So Cam Newton beat them. And I don't see the Patriots going across the country and winning at Seattle, especially with a magnificent opening performance by Russell Wilson. But if they did go there and pull an upset, my goodness, what a great start for Bill Belichick and the Patriots when everybody's picking Buffalo. Not everybody, but just about everybody picked Buffalo to win the division.
Baker Mayfield and the Browns struggle against Baltimore. Now the Browns play Cincinnati, and I've already seen with some ESPN commentators saying, who would you rather have, Baker or Burrow? Has Baker Mayfield's stock fallen that far?
Well, first of all, watching football this weekend, which I could do because the Texans didn't play, it seemed to me Mayfield had more commercials than he had completions. Every time I looked up, there's a Baker Mayfield ad. And it's a national ad, and he's making a lot of money, and I'm happy for him. I think, you know, he's on his third coach in 3 years. He's got another system to learn. And I saw somebody that I respect, and I can't remember who it was, a former NFL person, saying he's trying to be too much like Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson, trying to move around, throw on the run, when he's basically a pocket passer. They need to make sure he stays in the pocket. You know, his rookie year, he was tremendous for a rookie. And as far as having him or Joe Burrow, what did Joe Burrow do? Ran for a touchdown? I mean, Joe Burrow may go to the Hall of Fame, and he may be like Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston. So at least Mayfield's going into his third year. I just feel like if Mayfield, he needs better coaching and he needs better discipline, and he needs to focus on what his strengths are and don't try to be somebody else so you can get commercials. Although, it's, can you imagine how many commercials he'd have if he could actually win?
We've heard a lot of talk about running the position of running backs being devalued and not that many running backs taken that high in the draft. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire was, what, the 32nd player, and it was the running first running back taken. But I want to get to this point. Alvin Kamara signs a 5-year extension, $75 million. Dalvin Cook, 5 years at about $63 million. Do you think that those teams overpaid for the value of a running back, or do you think those guys are worth that?
No, I think they paid what they had to pay. It started with Christian McCaffrey getting the best deal. And they still, they're really good contracts. I guess it started last year when Zeke Elliott held out to get what he wanted. And it's amazing to me how it was such a rush on those quarterbacks right before the season started. I tell you who's devalued is Saquon Barkley, because that guy, because of his offensive line against the Steelers, my goodness, you talk about smothered, suffocated, he was. And I'm sure he'll bounce back because Pittsburgh's defense is great. It was great last year. They didn't make the playoffs because Ben Roethlisberger was out. But it's fun to see these guys get paid because the owners have the money. If they didn't have the money, they wouldn't be paying that money, and nobody takes a bigger beating than running back. So I'm all for every one of them getting every dollar possible.
Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. We've got another segment with John coming up as you listen to Sports Talk. We've got more coming your way on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
Looks like you've been missing a lot of work lately.
I wouldn't say I've been missing it, Bob.
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. And, John, with the start of any season, you can't wait to get your first look at rookies in their new spots. What would you say about some of the rookie quarterbacks who made their debut? Let's start with Joe Burrow.
First of all, it's going to be so much tougher for rookies this year, not just quarterbacks, but every position. If you think of how difficult it is anyway, even when they have OTAs where they're getting on-field coaching, mini camps, rookie mini camp, veteran mini camp, then they have four preseason games and joint practices. So they have so much, they have more resources to help them develop in ordinary years. Now that a virtual off-season program, no preseason, and they got to go in and quarterback an NFL team. So Joe Burrow came close. But the fact is, he still plays for the worst team in the NFL. And it's only a matter of time before we see Justin Herbert with the Chargers, even though Anthony Lynn loves Tyrod Taylor. Everybody loves Tyrod Taylor. It's kind of like Jesus. Jesus loves everybody. Loves Tyrod Taylor. But the fact is, everywhere he goes, they draft a quarterback number one, and they play him over Taylor. So you got a high investment in a quarterback. Your team's not very good. Play him. You got an excuse for losing. You're going to get a higher pick. And Tua Tagovailoa, when he gets to play, and it's only a matter of time because Fitzpatrick was awful in the first game. Usually Fitzy's better early, and then he fades. And right now, Tua's going to be in that lineup quicker than a lot of people seem to think, and I can't wait to see him. I can't wait to see all these rookies, and it's hard to believe that anybody would give a rat's you know what about Cleveland and Cincinnati Thursday night. I guess they want to just get them out of the way, but the fact is we're going to get to see a lot of Baker Mayfield commercials, and we're going to get to see Joe Burrow for the first time since he won the national championship game on national television.
Now, there's also the flip side of that coin. You have rookies that want to make a big first impression. I don't think there's any question that the Lions are thrilled to have DeAndre Swift. Broncos excited about what Jerry Jeudy brings to their team. But Jeudy had a couple of key drops at moments when the Broncos were trying to beat the Titans and came up short. Swift, of course, had a chance to help the Lions salt away the game. And he also couldn't hang on to it. How tough is it when that first step, essentially, that you're known for out of the box is not the right one?
I felt so sorry for Swift. I think anybody would other than Bears fans, because the ball was right in his hands when he came out of Georgia. The scout said one of his strengths is being able to catch the ball, and he just dropped it. And your heart had to go out for the kid. Now, I don't like Matt Patricia. I'm glad they lost for him. They're like lost nine leads since he's been there in the fourth quarter. And I think he's not long for the head coaching world. He'll be like Josh McDaniels. He'll be back being a coordinator after he gets fired in Detroit. As far as Jerry Jeudy, yeah, he had two drops, but he didn't lose that game. Vic Fangio,
right,
the head coach, did a terrible job of clock management. Had he used his timeouts when he should have, when Tennessee had the ball, he would have gotten the ball back with 1 minute and 7 seconds left, needing a field goal.
John, regarding teams that lose the Super Bowl, a lot of them the next year seem to have a hangover. Do you think that's what happened with San Francisco, or do you think they'll be fine, they'll bounce back, and they'll be a playoff team?
I didn't pick the 49ers to win the division. I picked Seattle because of that post-Super Bowl hangover. Never been able to figure it out, Jimmy. When you lose a Super Bowl, you would think that team should be the most motivated team in the NFL during the offseason. Mm-hmm. So hungry, they're slobbering for 6 months for a chance to get back and get that close again. But that's not how it works. Usually the championship teams that lose there have a more likely chance to get back. And so I think the 49ers will probably make the playoffs. But I certainly don't think they're a Super Bowl contender this year. But I didn't think they were last year either, and I was wrong about that.
What did you think of the performance of Dallas and Dak Prescott at the Rams?
I thought they would score more points. I watched the Rams in Hard Knocks. I didn't buy into them like I have Hard Knocks teams in the past. I tried to learn my lesson with the Browns, and they fired – didn't renew Wade Phillips' contract, defensive coordinator, which in essence has fired him. And McVay brought in a friend of his. He did a terrific job. Cowboys had number one offense in the NFL last season. I still don't agree with the offensive interference call that was called at the end of the game to rub out a long Cowboy completion. I know a lot of people don't like the Cowboys, thought it was a great call. And I understand the rule, but I just don't think at that time of the game, unless it's blatant, that it should be called, because it certainly affected the outcome.
What are your thoughts on Dak Prescott, how good of a quarterback he is, and whether you think Dallas should find a way to pay him what he wants?
People acted like it was more about the length than the money, Jimmy. Now the price is going to go up. You know, if he gets – 2 years ago, they won division. They went to the playoffs. They beat Seattle in the first round. They lost to the Rams. And Rams went to the Super Bowl. Last year, they did not get to the playoffs. So they bring in Mike McCarthy. He won a Super Bowl at Green Bay. And I think they should be better. I picked them to win the NFC East. A lot of people picked Philadelphia. I guess we should have picked the Washington football team. And I just think that that Dak Prescott is a good, really good quarterback who's great at times. Good leader, great guy to community. Everybody respects him. Who else are they going to get that's better with the general manager that they have there?
Well, and we had this caller earlier, but my understanding, and I heard this reported multiple times, Dallas wanted to give him a 5-year deal. He wanted a 4-year deal. The money wasn't that. Go ahead.
That's what everybody said. Is it worth not doing it? Because if they do it next year, it's going to cost more money. They should have done a 4-year deal and then not worried about it. I don't understand why the deal would fall apart over 1 year. Now, if they franchise him again or sign him to a new contract, it's going to cost more. than it would have cost going into this last season. Usually, the longer you take, the more it's going to cost you, and that's why teams that do deals and people go, oh, my God, how could he pay that guy so much money? A year later, you look pretty darn smart.
It's interesting. I think it's the first time it's happened since the merger, and that is every team that was on the road last week is at home this week, and so nobody will have two straight home games or road games to start the season. Has anything changed in if the Texans will have any fans in the stands on Sunday?
No, the Texans will have no fans in the stands for the Ravens coming in here, and it wouldn't matter because the Ravens are going to obliterate them anyway. And it's interesting that the only two teams that allowed that sold tickets, I think Denver let in 500 people that were friends and family members, but Jacksonville, which couldn't even sell 14,000 tickets, sold 10 and they won. Kansas City sold 15 and they won. And I know the Texans, Jerry Jones says he's going to put 25% into his stadium. And I'm pretty sure the Texans will announce soon that their next home game here against Minnesota on October 4th, they will have a small number of fans.
What are you working on for Sunday, John?
I'm working on a thing for tomorrow about the Titans showed in the playoffs how you can give up a lot of yards running and passing to Lamar Jackson and still win. And I don't think the Texans can do it, but they got the blueprint. And we've got podcasts. We've got a TV show. Everything's on TexasSportsNation.com.
John, we appreciate it. Have a great week. We look forward to catching up with you next Wednesday.
John and Jimmy, thank you very much as always. I hope you guys have a great week, and I look forward to that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. John McClain of the Houston Chronicle joining us on the Stanley Fenching and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break. When we return, we catch up with DA Damon Amendolara of CBS Sports Radio. He joins us next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Hey, I'm Ball for Life, Bobby Scott, and we're counting it down. It's just 10 days until...
It's football time in Tennessee!
This Sports Radio WNML Countdown to Kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com.
Go home!
Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. It's an absolute pleasure to head to the Stanley Fenching and Gates Hotline as we get to say hello to our friend Damon Amendolara. He's DA on CBS Sports Radio. He does the morning show from 6 until 10. And, of course, you can always find everything that he covers on the air on podcast or through his fantastic Twitter account, DA on CBS. But, Damon, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Happy to say thumbs up, and everything right now is staying on track for the SEC to kick off as expected a week from Saturday. And it had to be an extra ray of sunshine for you this morning when you got to catch up with VFL Charles Davis. What was that like?
Oh, it's the best. Charles Davis is just one of the best guys in the business, not only because he's supremely talented in terms of communicating an idea, a concept, some kind of extensive football stuff for the common person as well, but he's really researched, and he's just a great guy. In fact, Charles Davis was the connection that I had to come down and see a Vols game and get to go inside kind of the bowels of the stadium and go see some of the facilities and see the practice facility and the locker rooms. It was because of Charles's hookup. He knows everybody, as you might imagine. Everybody loves him. There's not a bad word to be said about Charles, so I always love having him on the show. And we talked a lot of NFL and what went down in week number one and stuff about Tom Brady and stuff about Drew Brees and stuff about the Browns. So I just love when we get to catch up.
How cool was it to see as much college football as we saw this past Saturday as well, wrapped and sandwiched in and around week one of the NFL?
Yeah, it was great. If you're a college football fan such as myself, you know, coming down the home stretch of the summer, everything was such an unknown, and I guess in some ways it's still an unknown, but just seeing the college football stadiums opened up and the teams on the field and competing, that was cool. It was good to see. And it's not the same without the fans, obviously. The fans and the bands and the pageantry is what makes college football so beautiful and so wonderful. But I'll take it. I think we'll all take it. As long as the teams are playing on the field, it's definitely a win.
Devin, I wanted to ask you about the Big Ten resuming play. Hopefully they will get going, as they said, October 23, 24, that weekend. Your thoughts on the Big Ten getting back on the field?
Well, when they made their decision a little over a month ago, I did not agree with it, and not because I disagreed with whatever their science decision was, whatever their input was, whatever their decision-making was. That was fine. I just thought the timing was incorrect, because if you had the ACC and the SEC and the Big 12 steamrolling ahead, and they were at the very least going to say, we're going to wait to pull the plug, pulling the plug on the season should have been the last decision you make on the season. And I understand that the Big Ten had reservations about testing and about keeping the kids safe. And I think we can all agree that's got to be the priority. So if you felt like you couldn't do it, every one of us, I would think, could understand canceling the season. But there was no reason to do that in August. I said at the time, and I hold steady to this, if you were one of these major conferences, on August the 1st, you don't have to make that call. You just say, we'll reassess September 1st. We'll reassess September 15th. We'll reassess October 1st. Because as we see, you could kick off the season with any one of these conferences up until late October. That's what the Big Ten is doing. So there was absolutely no reason to jump before you had to do that. That needed to be the last decision you make on the season. Don't allow the time to expire where you could reverse course and then have to, you know, pick up your own pieces and have dealt with the fallout and dealt with the parents. So the Big Ten coming back to play football, great. I just think that there was no reason for them to do it so early to have to reverse course and then kind of pick up the pieces today.
Now, what's interesting is that Ohio State cornerback Sean Wade is undecided about playing. He said he has an agent, but he hasn't signed anything. And then a Michigan quarterback, Dylan McCaffrey, has opted out. So do you think there'll be a number of players from the Big Ten that opt out even though they've been cleared to play?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think that you're going to see, and we've seen some players in the SEC, some players at LSU, know that if they've got a relatively high round grade, then why risk whatever is going to happen for college football this year? Now, I don't want to judge these players protecting their own health, because I understand it. Look, this is their investment in their future. This is their investment in their careers. If they've got a high round grade right now for the NFL, a first or a second round, are you really going to come back and risk whatever might take place this year to where you could slide? But what's interesting to me about this is that if you're worried about COVID, or you're worried about testing, or you're worried about just all stuff that goes into the unknown about, you know, right now college football, I get it. If you're just worried about injury, that's a different thing, because now we're not talking about playing spring football. If you were going to say, okay, we're going to play a spring season and then you're going to turn around and try to play an NFL season in the fall, hey, I get it. You don't want to try to put your body through that in year number one of your NFL career. But if it's just worried about injury now, well, I mean, then that could go for any other season. So I do think you're going to see players opt out, although, you know, I think that there's less and less reason to do so if you're going to play the football season in the fall and wrap it up when it's normally going to be wrapped up, which is basically late December.
What was it like? How weird is that feeling still lingering out there that Notre Dame won an ACC conference game against Duke?
Oh, listen, isn't this just sweet? Isn't this just amazing? Notre Dame, which has held its nose at all of us peons in conferences for 100 years. Oh, we're too good for that. We don't need a conference. We've got our own television deal. You guys just play down the road. We'll do our own thing. Has to suddenly come back to a conference. They have to suddenly paint that ACC on the field. They've got to be down in the sewers with the rest of us, right? The peasants that have to play in the conferences. So it's so nice to see Notre Dame have to take it on the chin. They've got to play with us now. It's so nice.
And tell me, in future negotiations, should the Sun Belt, or a.k.a. the Fun Belt, demand home-and-home series with Big 12 teams?
I'm telling you, at this point, the Big 12 should have to travel to the Sun Belt. That was the most embarrassing weekend possible for the Big 12. I mean, not only does Iowa State as a ranked team lose at home, that's embarrassing enough, but then you have K-State losing at home as well. And then you have Kansas, who not only gets beat by Coastal Carolina, Coastal Carolina whooped them. I mean, that was a blowout win over Kansas. So, I mean, the Big 12 might want to rethink having come back to play. They might want to find another excuse to just be like, yeah, you know what? Maybe spring football, maybe no football this year, because outside of Oklahoma and Texas, we're just going to give them a waiver. They play, and the rest of us are just going to shut down for the time being.
Hey, players can opt out. Maybe teams can opt out.
Yeah. Well, Les Miles might want to opt out right now. Yeah, but... Kansas, they might need the Sun Belt one day to actually invite them in.
So many folks in the NFL were looking forward to see what Tom Brady would do with the Bucs. It was not a rousing debut at all. Do you expect Brady and the Bucs to be much better offensively going forward?
I do think they'll be better, but I do think there's going to be pockets in the season, maybe long stretches, where Tom Brady looks his age. I just don't think you can expect at 43 years old Brady to look like he did at 40 or at 38, and I think some people came into the season doing that. Tom Brady keeps himself in such amazing shape. He's never really had a big drop-off, and so we just kind of assume that he'll look like this forever, and Brady's done a great job kind of cultivating that brand. But inevitably, it comes to an end. I don't think the final game we ever see Tom Brady play is going to throw for 380 yards and four touchdowns. I think the final game that we see him play will probably make him look like he's pretty mediocre, kind of like he did in the wild card game last year. So we've got to remember that that's a really good opponent. We've got to remember it was week one after kind of a slipshod offseason. We've got to remember that he's learning a new offense with new targets, and that is a factor. But I would not be surprised if there are games like we saw last week against the Saints that keep popping up throughout the season. I don't think they'll be the majority of games, but I think over the course of 16 weeks, I think you'll see five or six games this year where you go, boy, yeah, Tom Brady's looking 43, because why wouldn't he? This is uncharted territory, and even Tom Brady at some point is going to show that.
What did you think of Ben Roethlisberger's season opener against the Giants?
That's a really good win for Ben Roethlisberger personally. For the Steelers, you know, the Giants are bad. The Steelers are much better than the Giants. It wasn't a pretty game. The Steelers kind of come out with a workmanlike victory on Monday night. But I thought for Ben Roethlisberger, coming off a career-threatening elbow injury, to come back and just have a couple of throws that he looked in rhythm. It looked like it all kind of came back to him like riding a bike. To me, I just said, okay, that's just what you wanted to see. He threw for three touchdowns, no INTs, no really bad decisions, no bad plays. And, you know, there was a play where he was backing up from the pass rush and kind of off balance a little bit. He kind of flicked his pass into the corner of the end zone and led his receiver beautifully for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's all you need to see from Roethlisberger. He wasn't overthinking it. It was just kind of reactionary. He had done it 1,000 times before, and he could summit it and do it again. And the fact that he didn't overthink it, and he wasn't worried, and he wasn't kind of skittish in the pocket, and that he could still make that throw kind of easily, fluidly, I thought was a really good win. And we got to remember, the Steelers went 8-8 last year with no quarterback under center. I mean, Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph were awful. They looked like they played for Kansas. So to me, if you could, you know, if you could get, you know, even 75% of what Roethlisberger used to be, that's a huge win for the Steelers.
Our guest, Damon Amendolara, DA on CBS, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline. Tell me this, how long is it going to take the Clippers to pick up the pieces from blowing a 3-1 lead against the Nuggets and coming up short once again when it comes to getting to the Western Conference Finals?
Well, I think emotionally and mentally, that's a tough one to get over, because you're up 3-1 all season long. It was about the battle for L.A. and beating the Lakers. You're watching the Lakers wait for you, and you have three cracks at it. And one of the most clutch playoff performers in recent memory with Kawhi Leonard, maybe ever, and you blow all three, and then the last one's the worst one. You don't even lose on a buzzer beater. You lose in a whitewash. And so I think for the Clippers, there's, number one, a mental hurdle here that the Clippers organization has never gotten over that. They've never gotten to a conference final. But number two, this has got to work in year number two, because even though they've acquired Kawhi and Paul George and sold the franchise to do so, it's only a two-year deal for those guys, and they can opt out after next season. So now you're down to one chance to at the very least get to an NBA Finals, because anything less than that would be a huge failure. So I think this is a big one. It's not like there's help coming on the horizon, because you've traded away all of your draft picks over the next couple of years to acquire Kawhi and Paul George. So I thought last night that loss was as bad as that franchise was going to have to handle, because there's just not a lot of room now to do anything but, you know, press reset, and we're going to go after it again next year, and you've then got to do it next year because all the pressure's on you.
I liked how you phrased it yesterday on Twitter, and that is you're up for Major League Baseball in a bubble as long as Commissioner Rob Manfred remains there after the playoffs have come and gone. But what do you think that'll be like with the National League teams playing in AL cities and vice versa?
I get it, but I don't like it. I understand what you have to do, but I don't love it. I mean, part of the beauty of October baseball is the electricity in the ballpark, and every pitch is anticipated. And you have the cold weather that climbs into Yankee Stadium or Wrigley Field, you know, pick your cold weather city that's going to host a big game in October. And you take all of that away. And I understand why you have to do it. And that's because all of the money for baseball, basically, and returning and trying to recoup what they've lost this season comes in October. It's the playoff baseball games that get ratings. It's the playoff baseball games that Fox and Turner really want. And so you've got to protect those. So how do you do it? Well, you create the bubble, because, look, the NHL and the NBA have done it, and they've shown if you're inside a bubble, nothing goes wrong. I mean, you know, nobody tests positive. If somebody's trying to sneak a girlfriend in there or does something, you kick them right out right away. And, you know, it's kind of like it's the structure that you need to guarantee things. And right now these leagues are looking for guarantees. So you can guarantee every game will be played. You can guarantee full rosters. You can guarantee that the competitive balance is as normal as possible. But, man, it takes away a lot of juice when the Yankees play the Astros at Petco Park in San Diego. And, you know, I don't know. I guess I understand it, but I don't love it.
Completely understand. And since we had you on last, it's such an incredible story. Wanted to get your perspective. There's the incredible sadness of losing a force of nature like Lil Mo, a young man who just had such a great approach to being forced to battle cancer, a battle that he lost. But what was it like to see the MO in Baltimore for the Ravens be highlighted as Mo, to see him memorialized in the corner of the end zone the way he was? And what does it mean to you to share a special Lil Mo moment each day with the hopes of just putting a little wind in someone's sails?
Well, number one, I really appreciate you just talking about it, because I think the best thing we can all do is just talk about Mo and talk about what he meant and talk about what he represented. As you said, he was 14 years old. He battled cancer his entire life. He was a regular caller to my show, and he laughed every day. He laughed this infectious laugh. He was so happy about his Ravens and his Orioles, and you would have never known that he was blind and he battling cancer and spending most of his life in a hospital. And when he passed away, I just promised myself that I would never forget that lesson, that attitude is a choice and happiness can be a choice. You just have to wake up every day and find that inspiration. And I just said, I've got to make sure that I keep bringing his name up, because he's such an important person, I think, that the world needs. So when I saw the Baltimore Ravens this weekend paint the MO in Baltimore in the end zone, highlight it gold, I mean, just a my hair stood up on my neck. I just couldn't believe it. It was such a cool gesture, and it's going to be there all season long. And they had his mom, Sanzi, come to the stadium to finish painting it in the end zone. So she was there, and then this amazing fan group in Baltimore bought nearly 600 cutouts of Little Mo to put in the stands. So there's a whole section that's called Mo's Rose, and so he's there with the Ravens. And that, to me, kind of symbolized the best in sports, and such a wonderful reminder of how to approach every day. And every day on social media, as you're alluding to on Twitter and on Instagram, I'm trying to post something that makes me smile. And it's in honor of Little Mo, just a feel-good moment is what I've tagged it. And it makes me happy, and I think it's making other people happy. And that's kind of the reason that I think Mo is here to kind of teach us that lesson. So I appreciate you bringing it up, and If anybody wants to follow me for that on Twitter, DA on CBS, or on Instagram, at Damon Amendo. And every day, just a hat tip to Little Mo and try to smile.
We really appreciate it. Always, thank you for the time to join us here in Knoxville, and we look forward to catching up with you again in the very near future.
You guys know I love jumping on the show, so anytime you need it, thanks so much. Can't wait for SEC football in a couple of weeks. Let's go. Let's do it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Damon Amendolara, okay. Joining us on. Yes, sir. Thank you. Joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment to hour number three of Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Turn us up and embarrass the Alabama fan that sits in the next cubicle. This is 99.1, The Sports Animal.
We come back to say so long for hour number three of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams coming up hour number four of the program. And we still have a lot coming your way as we look forward to bringing you comments from Jay Graham, Tennessee running backs coach, as well as a practice report from Eric Kane. Up next, your chance to win with a Sports Fix at 6. So stay with us on 99.1, The Sports Animal.